ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with vegan chef Christina Addington, also known as the Vegan Temptress. Many of you may know Christina as a grand prize winner on the Food Network's television show Cutthroat Kitchen. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
Fish Information and Services reports on a Greenpeace study that showed that 80% of tuna sold in the American market fails to meet fundamental sustainability standards. The Greenpeace canned tuna ranking team drew this conclusion after analyzing 14 well-known U.S. national and private label supermarket brands, including retail giants Walmart and Kroger. They found that most brands do not have adequate measures in place to address both sustainability and the human welfare and labor issues that plague the industry. According to Greenpeace, consumers should know that popular and trusted canned tuna brands are contributing to ocean destruction at alarming rates. The study showed evidence that three of the biggest brands, Starkist, Bumblebee, and Chicken of the Sea, all of whom list extensive seafood sustainability practices on their websites, are said to be among the worst offenders. In this regard, a Greenpeace representative added, while the biggest brands have thus far refused to offer sustainable tuna, the silver lining here is that other companies are stepping up to provide ocean-safe options for their customers. Nevertheless, the National Ocean Fisheries Institutes called the list non-scientific, non-transparent, and completely subjective, and explained that the list itself follows a model Greenpeace has used for years, ranking companies based on a system for which the scoring methodology is totally arbitrary and hidden, and then promote those rankings in the media. The U.S. tuna ranking is part of a global Greenpeace campaign to transition toward fair and sustainable global tuna fisheries for our oceans and ocean-dependent people. In addition to the ranking, Greenpeace developed a Decoding the Can page to assist consumers with the various labels and options on a tuna can. A better option would just be to forgo tuna.
As a result of the lawsuit filed by the national nonprofits Animal Legal Defense Fund and People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, the Pamplona-style Great Bull Run agreed never to return to the state of California. The lawsuit, which was filed under California's unfair competition law, alleged that the events in which panic bulls chase fleeing runners violate the state's cruelty to animals law that prohibits causing bulls unnecessary suffering, worrying bulls, and staging bloodless bullfights or similar exhibitions. The settlement means that last year's Great Bull Run in Alameda, California, after which one runner was hospitalized with a concussion and bruises, will have been the only one ever to be held in California. During the Great Bull Run events, organizers send as many as 36 panic bulls barreling down a narrow track at up to 35 miles per hour, chasing participants, many of whom have been drinking alcohol. Organizers attempted to hold events in Los Angeles, Lake Elsinore, and Temecula last year, but local officials refused to issue the requisite permits out of concern for public health and safety. Forcing panic bulls to run like this causes unnecessary risk of injury to them and poses a public safety risk for the human participants. For more information on this lawsuit, please visit ALDF.org.
The Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics wants to make sure that America's youth eat well and that parents know what to buy at the grocery store in order to make that happen. To that end, the industry trade group set out to make a label to tip consumers off to the best foods they can buy for their kids' health. The program is called Kids Eat Right. Last Thursday, the group announced the first product that would bear the coveted seal of approval that's backed by 75,000 registered dietitians and others who work in nutrition. And the product is Kraft Singles. That's right. Kraft processed cheese-like product was the first food-like substance to win the endorsement of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Well, Kraft didn't exactly win the endorsement. Kraft paid the Academy an undisclosed amount of money to use the logo Kids Eat Right on their packages of Kraft singles. That should be Kraft singles. According to Kerry Ryan, Kraft's Director of Nutrition, Science, and Regulatory Affairs, it's all about calcium. Ms. Ryan said that more than three-quarters of kids between 4 and 18 years old need more calcium in their diets. Ryan, who's a dietitian, is also a member of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Kraft rubbery orange slices do contain calcium, a full 20% of the recommended daily value in a slice. But they aren't exactly the kind of low-calorie, high-fiber, whole-grain food that diet research has shown to be best for your health. A serving of kale or broccoli has more bioavailable calcium. And the cheesy singles are high in salt. Each slice contains 200 milligrams of sodium. And according to Kraft's website, a grilled cheese sandwich with two slices of Kraft singles contain 870 milligrams of sodium, or almost half of a child's daily allowance. Diets high in sodium can lead to high blood pressure, which increases the risk of heart disease and stroke. Kids should eat right, and that means a varied plant-based diet.
Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with vegan chef Christina Addington. Christina is the grand prize winner on Food Network's television show, Cutthroat Kitchen. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Christina Addington. Thanks for being with us, Christina.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Christina, can you start out by telling our listeners your path to veganism?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in the South in Kentucky with a very Southern family. So I have a very compassionate family, and we were always concerned about helping others, and we loved animals, but it never crossed my mind growing up not to eat them. I didn't know anyone that was vegan. You know, I didn't even know exactly what that meant when I was younger. And it's been about 8 years for me, and I just randomly happened upon some information online about animal rights. And it was very shocking to me, you know, where our food comes from, the animal industry in all sectors. And I took it really hard, and I knew pretty quickly that I wanted to go straight from being a typical meat eater to being vegan and advocating for animal rights. So I cut out meat overnight, and I cut out dairy within a month, and pretty instantly started volunteering for some demonstrations and protests and talking to other people. It was really a 180 in who I was from eating meat to going vegan.
That's great. How did your family respond to it?
You know, at first, well, they've always been supportive of my decisions, but I think at first they thought it was just going to be a phase.
Yeah.
And they didn't really understand it. My mom, I remember, was so upset because she didn't know who she was going to give her cookbooks to, and she was worried about the future children that I still don't have, and I'd make them be the craziest thing. But yeah, it took probably a little over a year for them to really understand, because even, you know, back then it was very new to me. But after a while, they got comfortable with it, and now most of our family meals are vegan.
I grew up in the South, too, and I bet, like my kitchen, your kitchen probably had a big can of bacon grease that your mother
Yes.
used to cook stuff in.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of my family, I live in Louisville, Kentucky, and my parents live in a smaller town nearby, but the rest of my extended family are still in the hollers of Appalachia.
Yeah.
And they all, yes, they still have mason jars of bacon grease. They wouldn't know how to cook without it.
Tom was telling me a few weeks ago he found a new vegan product of bacon grease.
I think that's going a little too far.
Yeah, Yeah, I heard about that. How funny.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I got to admit, I tried it. So you're a vegan chef. How did you get into cooking?
I've always loved to cook. My mom cooked a lot of meals from scratch. Eating together as a family was a big part of growing up in my house. So I had planned on going to culinary school even before I went vegan. So I did that, and it was a great school here in Louisville, and they were open to the idea that I was vegan, and they would bring in stuff that I could cook with, but they really had no idea. And again, this was almost 8 years ago. They had no idea what to teach me or show me, so I ended up dropping out and just figuring it out on my own. And I spent 5 years working for PETA, full-time, and loved every minute of it. But while I was doing that, started up a small food business on the side, which was where my brand Vegan Temptress came in. So I started doing some classes and small-scale stuff on the side. And then it's just been about a year and a half since I've been a chef full-time and decided to make that, you know, my outlet for talking to people about going vegan.
What did you do for PETA?
For 2 years, I was a campaign coordinator, so I traveled the U.S. pretty much 3 weeks out of every month, and I talked to the public and the media. I focused a lot on food and did a little bit pretty much on every industry, on the entertainment industry, on the clothing industry, and then I also spent a few years as a corporate liaison for them, which was a really rewarding position because I was working behind the scenes with major brands, getting them to enhance their animal welfare policies.
That's great. And a lot of people take that for granted, I think, too, and don't even think that that's a possibility to work with the corporations. You know, they feel like they have to fight the policies from the outside. But I think work of like PETA and HSUS is to go and actually work in the boardrooms and get them to change their policies.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It sounds like not to make it appealable to most people to drop out of school, but it sounds like it worked out great for you because you were featured or you became a contestant on Food Network's television show, Cutthroat Kitchen.
I did, yeah. It's funny, I had just started just a few months before cooking full time and made that, you know, my life's mission. And I applied for the show just kind of randomly, not thinking they would ever call me. And they called me the next day. And one of the first questions they asked was, would you be willing to cook with meat and dairy? And I just instinctively said, no way, that's not who I am.
Oh, good.
But then I said, you know, I would definitely be willing to substitute with other foods. So they said, well, we might be able to work with that. And they asked me to be on the show, but I had no idea what to expect, and it happened so quickly. They flew me out to L.A., and it was a whirlwind. It was one of the craziest things I've ever done.
So they set it up. So they set it up so you didn't have to get tricked into using bones to make something, right?
Well, yes and no. They definitely did not do me any favors. Fortunately, the first dish was corn chowder.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like you could probably handle that one.
Yeah. But the next dish was gyros, which is typically lamb, I believe.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And nobody else on the show was vegan, and they didn't do me. There wasn't tofu. They didn't even have vegetable broth or soy milk in the pantry. So they did not do me any favors. It was definitely a struggle.
And so what's the premise for the show for our listeners who may not have seen it yet?
Sure. It's four chefs, and it's a little bit – it's a cooking competition meets gladiators, if you will. It's hosted by Alton Brown, and every chef starts out with $25,000. And throughout the show, really strange things come up that you can bid on, and it might be taking away all of your competitors' knives. So they have to cook this meal in 30 minutes with no knives, for example.
It's easier with tofu than with beef.
Yeah, exactly. One thing I got stuck with was I had to be, when we were doing gyros, I had to be tied up in a toga with another chef while we were both cooking separate meals. So not only is your cooking ability on the line, but you're really jumping through hoops to try to put a meal together whatsoever.
That does sound like a crazy experience, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And the name of it isn't very compassionate either.
No, not at all.
But were you able to say anything about veganism while you were on the show or to promote that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I talked about why it was important to me and how, you know, I really valued being a chef that didn't cook with animal products. And I talked a little bit about that on the show. So when it aired, I was so excited to see them highlight that about myself. And it ended up picking up. I got a lot of people contacting me afterwards.
Oh,
and
great.
Still, reruns are still airing pretty consistently. And I don't even know when they're on. But every time the show airs again, I'll get a bunch of emails just from random people that are so grateful that I stuck to my values and ethics and who I really am on the show. So that's cool to see.
That's good, because so seldom on the Food Network do you see anything. Well, I don't watch it that much anymore. It's just very hard to watch them, you know, grappling with animal products and saying mm-hmm. how much love there is in their kitchen.
Yeah, it's surprising that there's not more vegan-oriented shows on the Food Network, but I think we'll get there.
Well, you haven't tooted your own horn yet, but you were actually the grand prize winner for the show.
I did. I won the show. Yes. One of the highest amounts that's ever been won.
So I guess if you what happens is you can use your money you know, to bid on those items, like you said, and then you get mm-hmm. to keep the winnings. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. The final dish that we had to prepare was ginger snaps, the cookies, and I was actually with a pastry chef, so I was really nervous to begin with. And so, the only thing they had in the pantry was canned coconut milk, so I ended up using that, and I got stuck with using sushi ginger or pickled sushi ginger.
Right.
So I had to make, yeah. And the other chef, she spent almost all of her money. I think it was like $15,000 she spent to give me that pickled sushi ginger to make the cookie. So I had plenty of money left after that, and fortunately ended up pulling it off instead of the pickled ginger snap.
I guess awesome. You're not serving those nowadays, though, huh?
Definitely not.
Were you able to force some other cook into using something strange?
I didn't get to trick them into an ingredient, but the final round, I had the sushi ginger, and since it was ginger snaps, they had made this little contraption that stuck your fingers together in a snap. So she had to make her cookies while her fingers were stuck together.
Oh, good.
They probably gave me a bit of an advantage.
Well, tell us about your new venture. I understand you have a food truck now?
I do. I used the winnings from the show to purchase a food truck. And then I also did a Kickstarter to help buy all the equipment that I needed for the truck. And it's called V-Grits. Grits is in the Southern style food. But it actually stands for Vegan Girl Raised in the South.
Oh.
That's nice. Yeah, it's hard for those acronyms to actually ever work, but that one actually works out perfectly.
Yeah, it did.
What kind of food do you offer in your food truck?
We do barbecue sandwiches, and I make the barbecue out of jackfruit.
Wow.
We also, one of our most popular dishes is a hot brown melt. So I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with a hot brown, but it's really an iconic dish. It started in Louisville at a hotel here. And traditionally, it's Texas toast, and then it has turkey and Mornay sauce and bacon and tomatoes. So I wanted to make a vegan version. So I make my own turkey using a seitan, and then I make my own cheese sauce with cashews, and the bacon is coconut bacon, and it's, you know, just a good, greasy, diner-style, melty sandwich. So that's probably the most popular. And we also do mac and cheese and grits, of course, because it's in the name.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, how far can you drive that truck?
Yeah, that's right. Texas is beautiful.
I would love to come down there. I bought a newer truck to do this so that it would be reliable enough to do some road trips. So I'm hoping to hit some of the veg fests around the country this summer.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. The one in Austin's coming up, too, in fact. So why did a food truck appeal to you as opposed to pursuing some other venture?
Like a restaurant or something?
Yeah. Sure. I considered opening a restaurant last year, and I looked at some space. And then someone just, I knew someone that had this truck for sale, and they asked me to look at it. And once I saw it, I thought, yeah, I think this is the direction I need to go. But, you know, one reason being the overhead for a food truck is so much lower. I was talking to investors about a restaurant, but I mean, you can't start a restaurant without $100,000, if not more. So that was going to be a more pricier venture. Yeah. Plus, with the food truck, it gives me the opportunity to talk to people. You know, when people order and I serve them the food, I can actually talk to them about the ingredients and what they're eating, which was really one of the most important parts of why I wanted to serve people vegan food.
Yeah, I thought about that. You get so much more face-to-face contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Much more intimate setting. So are there any challenges with a vegan food truck that you weren't expecting and starting it in Louisville, too, of all places?
No, not yet. It's brand new, and we've kind of been holding out, waiting for the cold weather to kind of disappear. So we've just done some pop-up kitchens where we took over some restaurant kitchens and tabling and things like that. So food truck season here is just starting. But, I mean, the food has been really well recepted thus far, which is really what I was banking on. You know, when I first went vegan here in Kentucky 8 years ago, most people didn't even know what that word meant. And it's been cool to see the transition where people are becoming a lot more open-minded.
Uh-huh.
So I think Louisville is ready for a business like this. I mean, I picked Southern food so that it will be something that's really familiar to people around here. So yeah, I'm hoping it's going to
Are you the only vegan food truck?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I suppose there's no vegan restaurants in Louisville either, right?
No, there's quite a few that are vegan friendly.
Right.
And they've got some really good stuff, but we don't have anything here that's you know, just vegan comfort food.
And what about dessert? What do you do for dessert?
I like to mix it up a little bit. We've done, you know, like coconut cake. I want to keep it with the Southern theme a little bit, so maybe some pies and banana pudding, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And the goal is also to get a soft-serve ice cream machine by the summertime.
Can't say you see soft-serve vegan ice cream readily available anywhere. Well, we know not where we are.
I heard a long time ago that, like, McDonald's milkshakes and stuff have a lot of soy in them, and that's sort of like soft-servey stuff, right? Huh. So maybe, do you have a recipe for that, or how are you going to do it?
I don't. I think it would probably be pretty easy to come up with. I mean, I make ice cream from scratch using coconut milk because it has the more fatty consistency pretty often. So I think coming up with a soft-serve recipe would be pretty easy to do.
Yeah. I'm just thinking here in Texas with our heat, I guess it would melt like crazy.
Instantly?
Yeah, instantaneously melting. So the food truck season's starting to warm up there. Do you go around the campus or how do you pick your locations? Or do you do one of these like things like, okay, the truck's going to be parked here at 7 p.m. on Sunday? Or how are you going to go about picking good locations?
Mm-hmm. We've got a pretty good-sized downtown with a business area that a lot of trucks will do weekday lunches down there, which we might try a little bit, but I feel like our niche is really these weekend festivals. And most of April and May, all the weekends are booked. Sometimes we're doing four events in a row, and which is great because we haven't even reached out to anyone yet to ask them if we could set up a festival. It's been people contacting us that have just heard about our new food truck. So it's farmers markets, it's outdoor festivals. We're doing some at a few breweries here in town. The craft beer scene is really taken off here in Louisville, and a lot of those places don't serve food, so they love to partner with food trucks, things like that.
Yeah, and do you still offer any teaching or any classes in cooking or anything like that?
I don't advertise it, but if I'm contacted, I definitely do. It's starting to get really busy with the food truck, which is a great thing. So I can't really advertise doing that kind of stuff on the side. But if it's somebody that's really interested in learning about vegan cooking, you know, I want to be there for them to help show them that it can be a little easier than expected.
Right.
How did the Kickstarter go? Was that pretty successful?
It was. My goal for the Kickstarter was $12,000. which I needed to outfit the truck with all of the equipment and redo the plumbing and the electrical and all that little stuff. And I ended up getting just under $14,000. And the vast majority of it came from people I've never met. And a lot of it came from people outside of Kentucky that just heard about somebody starting a vegan food truck and they wanted to support that idea. So it was really cool to see. Yeah.
Well, that's good. And then together with your winnings, wow, that worked out pretty well. So sounds like you're doing great business there. And like I said, I wish we had something like that here in El Paso.
Yeah.
maybe one of our listeners will get motivated to start.
Right.
We do have a couple food trucks that offer some vegan items.
Yeah.
So we do, but we don't have any. I don't think we have any that offer comfort Southern food.
No, we should mention you as a resource or a possible someone to emulate for the cooking dishes.
Absolutely,
Christina. Can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about all your adventures on Cutthroat Kitchen and what you're up to now with the food truck?
Mm-hmm. It's vgrits.com. That's V as in Victor. VGRITS.com. We post a lot of yummy-looking food pictures on Instagram and Twitter, and there's a Facebook. And then I also still do some personal stuff under my brand, which is Vegan Temptress.
That's great.
So, yeah, look me up. Shoot me an email.
We've been talking with vegan chef Christina Addington. Thanks so much for being with us, Christina.
Thank you so much for having me today.
With Easter around the corner, be sure to think carefully before purchasing or even adopting a chick or a rabbit for your child. These animals require a lifelong commitment and a lot of work.
If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org.
If you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the Earth, the Animals, and a Healthier Humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.
I don't eat no ham and eggs, cause they're high in cholesterol.
No, they don't fight. Do you eat them?
No tip, do you eat them? Not at all.
Again.
I don't eat no ham and eggs, cause they're high in cholesterol. You're obese, do you eat them?
Nope, shot, do you eat them?
Nope, not at all.
A casket, what's a mama's basket?
Some veggie links
and some fish that stinks.
Why, just the other day I went to grandma's house.
Smelled like she conjured up a mouse.
Eggs was frying,
ham was smelling.
In 10 minutes, she started yelling,
come and get it!
And the gettings were good. I said I shouldn't eat it, she said I think you should.
But I can't, I'm plagued by vegetarians.
No cats and dogs, I'm not a veterinarian.
Strictly collard greens and a occasional steak.
Goes on my plate. Asparagus tips look yummy, yummy, yummy.
Candy yams inside my tummy.
A collage of good eats. Some snacks, some nice treats.
Applesauce and some nice red beets.
This is what we snacked on when we're questing.
No second guessing. I don't eat no ham and eggs, cause I'm high in cholesterol.
I dig it, dig it, dig it.
Do you eat them? No tip, do you eat them? Not at all.
Bridge.
Now drop the beat so I can talk about my favorite tasting.